Hey Fresh Capital listeners, in this episode, we're diving into Flipkart, the leading e-commerce player in India. There's a lot to note about Flipkart. It's owned by the American retail giant Walmart, was founded by two ex-Amazon employees, and it seems to be using Amazon's own playbook to beat out Amazon in India. Of course, Flipkart isn't just an Amazon knockoff with over 350 million registered users. It has over double the number of Amazon Prime users in a market that continues to grow. We break it all down in this week's episode. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn about companies and investing. Joining me today, as always, good friend Albert. Albert, how are you doing?
Dan, I'm going good. Actually, I had a really good week. I saw The Strokes this week, which is one of my favorite bands ever. So, yeah, it's been good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well as well. It's been a relatively crazy week for me at work and other things. So, feeling pretty energized coming into this weekend. It's freezing outside, but feeling energized.
Don't tell me that, because I actually haven't left the house yet.
Let's get into it, Albert. This week, we're looking at Flipkart, which is a really, really interesting Indian-based business. There's like a lot of angles to break down here. The fact that, you know, Walmart owns a majority share, the fact that they're competing with Amazon in such a big way in India. Flipkart, what stood out to you as you started to dive into it?
Yeah, Flipkart, super interesting business, particularly because now they're predominantly owned by Walmart. So they're kind of really analogous to a combination of Amazon and Walmart combined. I think, you know, as we kind of talk at the top of the pod, the key things that stood out to me is just like they're the leader in a country that is so spread out, it's so diverse, it's so regionalized. Like, to be able to win in a country like India, with kind of all the diaspora internally within the country, is incredible.
Yep. So Flipkart is India's leading e-commerce marketplace with, you know, over 30 million products across multiple categories. You know, listeners who have listened to our pod about Coupang, about Amazon, very, very familiar with this e-commerce marketplace type business. Interestingly enough, they started with a team of the two founders who are ex-Amazon employees in the US, came over back to India, started up essentially the exact same idea with selling books online, and then that expanded out to their many, many products which they have today. They, you know, ship millions of shipments every month, they have millions of daily visits, warehouses, etc., and they're expanding out to other parts of businesses that we're going to get into. Albert, is there anything about the sort of founding story of Flipkart that catches your eye?
We talked about this during Bukala Park, but you're really starting to see like experienced executives from really successful tech companies like Amazon go to emerging markets to build like a ginormous business because they've seen the playbook and they've seen how it works. And it was exactly the same with Bukala Park, where you had, you know, one of their Amazon engineering leads who'd basically built AWS go across to Bukala Park as well. I think when I look at the founding story and, you know, using books as a wedge in exactly the same way that Bezos used, you know, books as a wedge to build a marketplace business, it's pretty crazy, right? Like it's literally the playbook of Amazon. You know, they did all the same things. They went and acquired other book businesses in the country the same way that Amazon acquired other book businesses around the world to grow its reach. You know, they built distribution in order then to build the rest of the business. Like, it's a pretty great story of two obviously very smart and successful founders executing a very well-run playbook.
I want to double click on that, but just, you know, to go back a step or two, you know, for those that don't use Amazon regularly, you know, an e-commerce marketplace is sort of a two-sided marketplace where obviously consumers are purchasing goods on the platform, and also you have merchants who are supplying and hosting their goods on the website there. So there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of merchants on Flipkart who are selling anything from phones to household goods, appliances, clothes, etc., which then your everyday consumer can browse, purchase, and then get delivered to their homes. The thing I wanted to double click on that you just talked about there, Albert, was Flipkart and Amazon started as, you know, like online bookstore. We could order books. And you talked about it as being a wedge. Go deeper on that.
Yeah. So when you talk about, you know, these giant markets, everyone's like, oh, you know, you should build a giant business. You could build a Walmart. But in order to actually win and start to build a really big business, something that a lot of people talk about is a wedge. And the wedge is the small niche of a market that you can quickly win in order to wedge open the rest of the market for you to take over. So to use Amazon and Flipkart as an example, the very small niche that they use to build their brand, to build their distribution, you know, to build expertise in e-commerce was books. And with the success of books and their book platform, they wedged themselves into the broader e-commerce market. And so when we talk about wedge, it's like, what is the niche that you're going to win in order to force yourself into the rest of the market so that you can win when you go more broadly?
Yeah, I love it. Because it's like, how do you build that loyal customer base? How do you work out the kinks in your product? How do you develop your product in a relatively protected environment before expanding out into more competitive environments like fashion, like mobile phones, electronics, etc. So Albert, now as we look at Flipkart, one of the things that I found really, really interesting is, and let's pull this up front, the comparison between them and Amazon. Like, it's very clear that their Western comparison is Amazon, and they're battling Amazon in India at the moment. When we look at the actual product categories where they're sort of facing off, it's mobile phones. Like, if you look at their gross merchandise value, which is essentially like, you know, all the transactions going through the platform, net, not net of returns and discounts, 49% of their GMV, Flipkart's GMV, is mobile phones, 32% is fashion, 16% appliances, 3% groceries. What does that sort of product mix tell you about Flipkart's strategy and their business?
Yeah, I think from a strategy perspective, it really just shows that Flipkart understand the market that they're playing in, which is obviously very obvious. Like, they're Indian founders who've spent time in the country, who've built businesses in the country. Like, India is an incredibly mobile first country. Like, I've spent time in India and everybody has a phone, and there's phones of all various prices. You know, we talked about Xiaomi a while on the pod, and they've got quite a big penetration in India. And so when you look at what Flipkart is selling and the fact that the majority of their GMV is almost half phones, it just shows that this is a country that's like phone crazy. It's actually pretty funny when you think about it, because they actually operate their own brand of phones. So Flipkart have a phone business where they've built their own and sell their own kind of white label phone in the same way that like other marketplaces try white sell or you know, white label goods.
Yeah, and this sort of capitalizes on a trend in India, which is really fast-growing e-commerce. So in terms of like a ratio of brick-and-mortar commerce to online commerce, e-commerce has only penetrated, I think it's about 6.2% in India, which is a tiny, tiny proportion. They're, you know, projecting out to 2025 that it might be about 10%. But still a really, really small proportion of all transactions actually happening online, which is why there's so much hype around Flipkart and why Amazon's trying to get in, because it's such a rapidly growing market for them to capitalize on. The reason I was interested in those sort of product mixes is because if you look out and project into the future, if you look at a more sort of developed e-commerce play like Amazon in America, they have a much more developed grocery business. And if we remember Coupang, they really went into groceries in Korea as a sort of a similar comparator. And the reason for that is sort of the margins. If 50% of your sales are these sort of more high value goods like a mobile phone, your margin is comparatively less on those sales. You know, some analysts basically sort of put the margin on a mobile phone as being about 6 to 7%, which is quite low margin. Compare that to something for like apparel, t-shirts, clothes, you're looking at a markup of about 15 to 20%. So as we look to this sort of battle between Amazon and Flipkart in India, it's really interesting to me which product areas they're focusing on, because some are just inherently more high margin than others. And Flipkart's product mix looks a little bit suspect for that sort of projecting out into the future.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is, like, it is a high margin business, but, you know, most people only ever buy a phone once or twice, you know, in you know, a couple of years. Maybe they'll buy a new phone every year or so if they're in a position to do that. I think with India, though, because you've got such a big population, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's lower volume than, say, groceries, where someone's buying it, you know, every week or every couple of days, because there's like almost a billion people in India. And in terms of phones, like, if you can sell 400 million phones, 500 million phones every year, and then that's an incredible kind of volume, especially if you're selling your own white label phones. I think there's a really interesting stat in the Walmart kind of acquisition documents where they talk about almost 80% of traffic, internet traffic in India, is mobile phone based. So, you know, it's a very mobile first country. And I assume that the remaining 10-20% would just be government or work officials who are using internet at work. And then they've got an estimated smartphone penetration of about 60%. So it's pretty crazy how mobile first this country is. And because they're like mobile crazy, they're probably buying phones at a much faster rate than their Western counterparts.
Keeping with this comparison between East and West, Albert, now you've brought up Walmart, who I think it was 2018 acquired, so the majority stake in Flipkart. I think at the time it was around about 80%. Now it's gone down to about 75% as they just had a raise recently to get more funds into the business. Do you find it a little bit interesting that Walmart, such a brick and mortar powerhouse, is the owner of a company like Flipkart?
Yeah, it's pretty funny, because I wouldn't call Walmart the natural owner of an e-commerce business. And I think that's probably why they had to acquire this business, or, you know, acquire the 80%. You know, the first is Walmart was really slow to the game in terms of e-com, and Walmart is traditionally a US-based business. So the combination of the two, you know, bricks and mortar in a digital age, and then not global, just means that the long-term future for Walmart was pretty bleak. I think they saw this as a very defensive play to counter emerging players, as well as companies like Amazon and Shopify, from stealing their lunch. And so what this enables Walmart to do now is to have a global presence via Flipkart in India. They've also got a very strong e-commerce mobile-first presence. They've got access to leaders who were from Amazon, and so now they've got access to talent and playbooks. And I think lastly, it just gives a sales channel for people through the Walmart marketplace to now sell globally. So it gives them a competitive advantage for vendors as well, so that vendors weren't just selling via Walmart, they're now selling globally to India. So I think, I don't know whether this was let's do this or we have to do this, but my hypothesis is that Walmart looked into the future and saw it was bleak and thought they had to do this. Like, what's your assessment, Dan?
Yeah, I don't know if Walmart looked into the future and saw it as bleak, but I think they saw it as being very static. You know, they have a huge market share of the American market. Realistically, there's no growth happening there of a sort of a high rate. And when you look at some of the investor materials, etc., that they've put out during that acquisition of Flipkart, so much of it focused on those numbers, like the rising e-commerce penetration in India, how Flipkart is a local leader in Indian e-commerce, how they're basically, you know, picking up what will be a growth vehicle for Walmart into the future. And, you know, I think there are those benefits you talked about of that knowledge share coming across to help Walmart's business. At the end of the day, we did Walmart as an episode, Albert, and we didn't see a strong push into e-commerce. They seem to be doing it fairly slow and steady. So I see this almost as just like a bolt-on, smart, you know, thrifty acquisition into a business that they saw was going to be, you know, very, very high growth in comparison to their sort of main game business.
Yeah, it's interesting, because Walmart have historically been really good at allocating capital. And so they just did this huge shift in their business from, you know, not building more stores and not doing buybacks and not giving money back to shareholders, but instead chose to acquire an e-commerce business in India. And so that to me screams like we need to drastically change how this business works and what the structure of this business is in order for us to keep competing. Because like undeniably so, Walmart is going to lose market share.
And I think if we just pivot this to the benefit to Flipkart from that acquisition, we couldn't speak highly enough of Walmart's ability to execute. And I think what's been clear over the last 3-4 years with Flipkart is that their ability to execute has definitely leveled up. Like, again, looking at that gross merchandise value, which I think, Albert, you've sort of talked about before as being a really significant metric for these e-commerce platforms, they've essentially grown at about a 40 to 50% GMV year on year. And before, in about 2018 market, they were projecting out hoping for about a 30% increase. So they've definitely exceeded expectations. Last calendar year, they were about $15 billion of GMV. Currently, they're on track to hit $23 billion. So they're just like leveled up their game in terms of the merchandise that they're moving, which has all sorts of benefits we've talked about before, that you're keeping out your warehouse stock turning over, which then decreases costs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the acquisition has been a really smart one for Walmart, and it's paid dividends for the Flipkart team too.
Yeah, let's talk more broadly about what Flipkart actually does, because I know we've just done this pretty big comparison to Walmart, to Amazon. You know, it does have this traditional e-commerce business that, you know, has its own white label products. It also enables SMB sellers to come and sell their products. They've also got a pretty broad set of other things in their business, which, you know, we see a lot in the companies that we cover in this region. They've got their business called Myntra, which is also a marketplace, but predominantly focused on fashion. They've started to integrate. So they've got a business called eCart, which effectively provides logistics and delivery for the vendors who use Flipkart. And Flipkart mandate and charge all their vendors a shipping fee to use eCart. And so the reason for that is they want to control the delivery speeds. They want to control the experience. So every vendor who sells on Flipkart has to use eCart, and that's part of the pricing. They've got a mobile fintech payments business called PhonePe that kind of enables, you know, consumer to consumer or business to consumer or business to business payments all through mobile. They've got a wholesale business. It's kind of like Alibaba. That means, you know, as a business, you can buy from other vendors who could supply your business. They've got a travel booking business called ClearTrip, and they've got a healthcare business called Sasta Sundar. So a highly diversified business that's really kind of tackling all aspects of the consumer market.
The ones that stood out to me and which realistically are sort of generating large amounts of revenue for Flipkart is obviously Flipkart, the e-commerce platform. That's about sort of 90% of their revenue. Then you have Myntra, which was, you know, about that sort of 10% range of their revenue, focusing on fashion. PhonePe, I'm not sure the pronunciation of that one, Albert, but that's the payments. And then eCart, which is their sort of logistics. To me, those are sort of like the four bedrocks of Flipkart, because you can see really how they facilitate each other. Walmart's got a very well-known flywheel. It looks like they've transferred that over to Flipkart with the way these four segments sort of operate. You've got a really, really broad e-commerce platform in Flipkart, which is providing that just wide range of product choice for consumers, keeping prices low. You've then got a fashion arm, which is, you know, bringing those white label goods, which are much more high margin and which you can cross-sell on the Flipkart platform. Payments, which covers all the transactions, and logistics, which cover delivery. So to me, those are the four main parts of the business to look at. And it's really cool that they've synergized it in such a way which each sort of play off each other. And, you know, some of them were strategic acquisitions, like Myntra was a recent acquisition, which they basically bolted on. And it's clearly because they see it as a bit of a defensive acquisition against so many competitors in that fashion space, and they needed to be a little bit more specific in their offering compared to just having fashion as one of their categories on their Flipmarket e-commerce platform. So yeah, generally really, really like the business, and I think it synergizes well.
Yeah. Let's talk quickly on the vendor side. If you're a vendor in India, why would you choose Flipkart over Amazon or vice versa?
Well, I mean, the main reason would probably just be in terms of like the market share. You know, you think, where am I going to get the most consumers looking at my products? You'd go to Flipkart first, and then you go to Amazon second. And in most cases, you're probably going to be on both, right? Definitely having that logistics arm of eCart is definitely an incentive. So there's been known cases, I think it's sort of like Lenovo and Samsung. These are international merchants that want to get their goods sold in India, but there's a really hard time of finding like, well, how do I do that last mile delivery? Like, how do I ship from, let's say, Korea if you're Samsung, get it into India, and then make sure it gets into the home of my consumers, you know, in a safe way? eCart is the solution to that, because Flipkart is taking on that problem. They're taking on the risk of getting it from point A to point B. So to me, that's been like a real differentiator, particularly for the international merchants, as to why they should associate with Flipkart.
Yeah. I think the other key thing is, you know, they're an Indian business, so they're really kind of clued in. During Diwali, they had this huge sale, and Flipkart, you know, bears the brunt of big like world or big website-wide promotions. And so it just gets more eyeballs. Like, I think it had, you know, like the biggest day of sales in terms of GMV of any other day they've had on Flipkart. So they've just got this ability to get more eyeballs on the screen. I think the other thing that Flipkart have started to do, which is, you know, a very much like Shopify-esque playbook, is to start provide additional services to the vendors who use Flipkart. So if you're selling on Flipkart, you can start to see analytics around who your customers are. You get a good sense of how much people are buying, who's buying, when they're buying, just to inform you and how to sell your product better. I think the other thing that Flipkart has started to do is just provide holistically all the other things you need to do in order to sell. Like, they're doing helping with marketing. You know, they've obviously got eCart to take care of logistics. And so Flipkart are really trying to integrate around the vendor experience in order to keep winning the vendors.
So it's funny, as you sort of say that, Albert, I'm getting flashbacks to our Bukalapak episode, where very, very similar playbook, a little bit of an undeveloped merchant marketplace where, you know, a lot of not digital savvy merchants. And so Bukalapak was spending a lot of time and money trying to essentially teach these people how to run a more online business, how to get them up to speed. Is that just the playbook and everyone's doing it? You know, Amazon's probably doing something similar. And if that's the case, what really does separate these two businesses? Is it just the speed at which they can onboard these merchants, the way they actually execute on the ground, or is there something more high level we can point to?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a combination of multiple things here. It's like, part of it is just the social proof of like, where the Indian company, you know, we know the locations, we know the vendors, we have the relationships, which naturally drives vendors and customers to use it, because they're, you know, regionalized first. And you can see that with any other kind of Western company that's trying to move into Asian markets and hasn't done that successfully. Like, Uber is a great example of that as well. And so that's the social proof is a big one. I think on a lower level, though, I think just being able to get more eyeballs being mobile first, I think, is key. Amazon wasn't mobile first as an organization. They're not necessarily set up to be mobile first. And I think in a country like India, where everyone is mobile first, like, you can start to see how that's completely different. Like, it's all about cramming things on screens. It's about quick deals. It's about how quickly can you incentivize people through the funnel of buying. And they've recently launched Shopsy, which is kind of another part of their business that is actually zero commission at the moment. So it's free for vendors. But that's a kind of a social media crossover with e-commerce that once again is blending the hybrid that we see across like Douyin and TikTok and a bunch of other apps, just to really keep pushing mobile first e-commerce.
Yeah, I like the call out. And I was trying to think, well, what are the artifacts of that? You know, what are the visible things we can see in the business that speak to being mobile first? And when they first started, you know, one of the small things was they didn't actually have like a separate website which was mobile friendly and one which was desktop friendly. It was all the exact same website for your mobile, which speaks to what you're saying, Albert, was that they were just all in on mobile first. Even if the user experience for someone on a desktop was a little bit more shoddy because of that, you know, they knew that the main game was mobile. And the second thing which sort of comes to mind for me is, you know, a little bit of an innovation born out of the Indian market was cash on delivery. So, you know, very, very common with e-commerce, you know, you pay by card or something. When a package comes to your door, you're not paying for it. It's already paid for. But there was such a distrust of online payments in India when they first sort of came into the market that a very common and highly used form of payment was, you know, the package comes and they pay cash on delivery, which is such an overhead for a business. Like, you really don't want to be signing up for that. But they just had to. That was a problem in the market that they had to solve for. And now it's funny that once they sort of get in, where now customers are familiar with your business, happy to purchase and buy from you, during COVID, they actually temporarily switched off cash on delivery for sort of health and safety reasons. And that just became a funnel for customers to then say, oh, I'm happy with this service. I'm now going to convert to paying, you know, basically online digitally with it. So really interesting sort of regional play there, regional uniqueness there to the business.
Yeah, no, that's a great call out. That's a great call out, Dan. And if I kind of just project into the future of Flipkart, or I guess like Walmart India and Flipkart, like where do you see this business going? Like, is this just a business that's going to be entirely localized in India and a few other emerging markets that they've started to play in? And is that enough for this business?
Funny you say that, Albert, because I was reading some of like the investor relations interviews with the CEOs, etc. Granted, this was in like 2018, 2019, but they were very clear back then that India is like a big enough problem for us to solve and we're not looking to go out to other markets at the moment. And it's hard to disagree with that. Like, India is going to overtake America as being the second largest e-commerce market in the next year or two, obviously behind China. And there's just so much for them to do there. I mean, we talked about the e-commerce penetration being 6% of total transactions. Why worry about going into other marketplaces when there's such a big runway in India to pursue?
Do you see this business predominantly in e-commerce until, you know, that saturation point hits? I'm just thinking about the Walmart comparison where they just go further into e-commerce and they've got stores and they've got a physical presence in addition to their marketplace. So they flip what Walmart does. Or is it what Amazon's done and they just keep using their playbook, which is like they build out other parts of the business that could generate a lot of money and require a lot of investment? Like, where do you see this business going?
It's just going to be the Amazon model. And to me, the interesting vertical which they're expanding into is groceries. So it's actually really, really competitive in India for the grocery market. Like, there's already seeing a huge uptick in those startups coming about, obviously because of COVID. And at the moment, Flipkart's got a very low market share. So there's a platform called Big Basket, which has about a 37% market share. Amazon 15%, Grofers 13%, Flipkart 11%. So it's sort of, you know, the fourth market leader in that area. And it's really behind its competitors, like Big Basket, etc. They're delivering in less than 30 minutes. Flipkart is basically set on this sort of 90 minutes or less delivery offering. And they're looking to scale up, getting into more cities. But essentially at the moment, they're in Calcutta, Chennai, and Mumbai, sort of three cities. So it's sort of a slow and steady approach, but that seems to be where they're moving into, which is groceries. Is there anything about groceries which you're sort of excited about, Albert? Do you think that's the right play?
Yeah, they're doing a thing that's very similar to Milk Run, or I guess Milk Run's doing a thing that's very similar to Flipkart. So Flipkart have started to operate dark stores, which are like, you know, little outlets or, you know, stores within key areas, cities, suburbs, regions, that they can do less than 2-hour delivery. And so they call this Flipkart Quick. And it's not just groceries, like they can do phones and things like that, which is pretty incredible when you think about. And so what gets me excited is that if you look at a mobile first country like India, and they can start to abstract away this idea of, you know, leaving to go to the local market or the local grocer, the shops to go get groceries, and instead you're trusting the brand that you've already known and grown up with to deliver you food, then I think that works out really well for Flipkart. And I think the other layer that enables this is that in a country like India, wages are much lower, density is also much higher, which means you can do rapid delivery to multiple people very quickly. So the unit economics can start to work out, particularly if you're doing high order things. Like if you're buying a phone and having that delivered to you in 2 hours, that's a high average basket order, which makes the unit economics of deliveries work out really well.
Yeah, it's a great point. I was looking at some analysis because I was a bit curious, like, why is everyone going into groceries? Why is Amazon pushing into groceries so much? And it's partly that sort of basket size you're talking about there, but it's a much reduced basket size, which is sort of getting my ears up. It's the customer loyalty. Because as we're saying, one of the problems that they have is they're so dependent on these flash sales. Like we said, 50% of their GMV is coming from these phones. 60% of their phone sales occur during flash sales. So there's just so much of their business concentrated in this idea of they're selling phones through a flash sale, which is very much a one-off sort of purchase. How do you start building up user habits to build loyalty to going to your platform every single day, purchasing things every single day? Groceries is such a good wedge into that, to use, you know, a term we used earlier in the pod, because that inherently has, you know, a weekly, if not daily, shopping cycle to it. And I think that's why they're looking at groceries as a way to flywheel the rest of their business, you know, start building up those user habits to the grocery side and then get them into the Flipkart marketplace more generally for home appliances, white goods, apparel, etc.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a mobile-first country and you're trying to push all your users and customers to be loyal, what's the best way to do it is to give them literally the device that they're going to do it on. And so I don't have a breakdown of all the brands that they sell and the splits across it, but if you've got people using the Flipkart white label phone, like that's just an incredible position of power, because now you can control everything from the device they use to what they order.
Sounds a little bit like Samsung, Albert. I remember them basically saying, you know, they want you to be using a Samsung product all times of the day, whether that be your computer screen, you come home, you turn on something smart in your home, the lights, the TV, etc. These companies, ambitions know no bounds.
No, for sure, for sure. And as we kind of hit, you know, the end of the pod, something that I thought was actually really, really funny. I don't know if there's any other points you want to talk about, Dan, before I go into this kind of like little fun fact.
No, go for it.
The Nokia actually have a contract with Flipkart. Nokia make TVs that Flipkart sell. So if you want to buy a Nokia TV, that's Nokia, the OG phone manufacturer, you can do that through Flipkart. So I just didn't even realize.
There's an episode idea for us, Albert, is to basically breakdowns of, I'm not going to say failed companies might be a bit harsh, but like if you look at where Nokia was in terms of market share position 10, 20 years ago to where it is now, it's a sight for sore eyes.
Yeah, I think, you know, on a similar vein, there was an article recently this week about like Kodak using its film technology to make EV batteries. So maybe there is something there.
Anything else you want to round out about Flipkart, Albert?
I think Flipkart's a great business. You know, obviously I'm a bit biased. You know, they're not public, but you can get exposure to Flipkart via Walmart, and you can read kind of Walmart's investor presentations to get an understanding of where Flipkart is as a business. So it's not entirely opaque. There is reporting behind Flipkart.
All right, Albert, let's go to verdicts. I might lead off with this one. There's a lot to like about Flipkart. If I look at my sort of traditional lens, they're a market leader in their locality, which is really, really, you know, it's something that I look for in a lot of businesses. A little bit concerned about their product mix, such a high dependency on mobile phones. But that being said, another thing I like is just tailwinds, you know, things where you as a business can maybe mis-execute, but you've got such a margin for error because the market around you is just expanding, expanding, expanding. E-commerce in India is expanding at a massive rate. Mobile phone use and adoption expanding at a massive rate. All these other verticals that Flipkart can get into, like groceries, they could expand out their product lines, etc. Obviously leading in logistics services with eCart, which can then service other parts of businesses and service merchants. There's just so much that I think Flipkart is on the starting line for and is just going to grow into the future. It's almost like a no-brainer to me, Albert. It's like if they just keep things up, they're going to rise with the tide.
Yeah, I mean, it's super obvious with Flipkart. It's like large market size, growing incredibly quickly, immature market, leading player. Like they're in a position for success when you look at all those things, and that's shown. Like I think you were talking about they're poised to hit 23 bill in GMV. When yeah. Walmart acquired them, they're at 8 bill GMV.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they tripled in the billions. Like it's so unfathomable to think about tripling. Everyone's like high growth. When you get to the billions in revenue in GMV, you can't really triple that because the magnitude's too large. But they did it, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So super keen on the business. Any other thoughts, Albert?
No, this is a cool business. I'm glad we got to do it.
All right, let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to Fresh Capital, a podcast about companies and investing told in a refreshingly simple way. We'll catch you next week. See ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn how companies operate and how investing works. Just a reminder, all information contained in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, financial, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Fresh Capital are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any opinions expressed in the show are not recommendations or advice. Please consult a licensed financial professional before you jump in. As always, we look forward to seeing you next week. See ya!